From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to Washington Watch on this Friday edition. You've made it. Congratulations. I hope you have a nice weekend planned. I am Sarah Perry. I'm Director of Partnerships. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins on this beautiful Friday Washington afternoon. We have lots to talk about today, and you'll actually hear from five lawyers, but I promise you, it won't be boring. It seems Disney's no longer having a mission of making classic quality films like Finding Nemo, The Lion King, Cars, you know, the movies that our kids grew up with. Instead, Disney has chosen to engage in social issues such as promoting homosexuality to children. And in just a minute, I'll talk with James Herson, entertainment lawyer and author of Newsmax.com's column, The Left Coast Report. In my second segment, an Ohio school district decided that they won't punish an 11-year-old boy for using the wrong pronoun when referring to his transgender friend, a boy pretending to be a girl. Richard Mast, attorney with Liberty Counsel, will join me about the victory for their client. At the bottom of the hour, Lehigh County, Pennsylvania, is now free to continue honoring its own history and culture with a 70-year-old historical seal, one that includes an image of a Latin cross. Diana Verm, an attorney with Beckett Law, who was counsel for Lehigh County, Pennsylvania, will join me to discuss the victory. And at 42 past, a New York judge ruled that Fordham University, a private school, must recognize Students for Justice in Palestine, a student chapter, despite the fact that SJP wants to delegitimize the nation of Israel. I'll talk with Liz Burney, attorney with the Zionist Organization of America. As a reminder, TonyPerkins.com is our podcast website. There you will also find a link for comment submission for HHS Regulation 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, wherein we want you to ask, like we have and like over 19,000 others have, a plain definition of the word sex in Obamacare. But let's go to some cultural questions. Disney has a bit of an agenda, and they've made it patently clear in some of their more recent offerings. We are not talking about the Finding Nemo and Lion King and Jungle Book that I grew up with, or even the movies that 10 to 15 years ago were being proffered up to my oldest son. No, the Disney of this generation is now a completely different Disney. One of the main shows that Disney has used to shoehorn a left-wing agenda is the sitcom Andy Mack on the Disney Channel. But they don't stop there. Joining me now with his analysis is one of my favorite guests, James Herson. He is the author of Hollywood Nation, Left Coast Lies, Old Media Spin, and the New Media Revolution. He is an international business attorney, cultural commentator, and author of the weekly column, The Left Coast Report. James, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you. How are you?
I am well. Well, we know that this is not the Disney of our generation or the generation before. This is a brand new Disney. And Disney's CEO has used every conceivable offering to push through what appears to be a very distinct set of viewpoints through all of these products specifically geared toward kids. And in fact, Andy Mack, which my children do not watch, but I understand is a very popular show on the Disney Channel, is sort of good for contextual background on this. 2 years ago, the sitcom featured a character named Cyrus who came out as gay, and Cyrus confessed to his friend Buffy that he liked one of the boys on the show, and in a subsequent episode became the first Disney character to openly say, "I am gay." And during the recent series finale, Disney depicted its first teenage gay couple between Cyrus Goodman and his classmate, TJ Clippin. wherein they both say that they like each other and they hold each other's hands. Now, this is not the only pro-homosexual offering of Disney's. In fact, there have been quite a number of programs in which they've used it as a vehicle. Some include minor characters like the character in Beauty and the Beast, or even the statement that in October of this year, there will be an openly gay character in a remake of the classic Disney ride Jungle Cruise. So we have quite a few and increasing in number examples of what they are trying to communicate and what their agenda is. But I want your take on why you think Disney has decided, at the potential loss of consumer dollars, to promote a liberal pro-gay ideology to children specifically, rather than simply focus on quality entertainment. What's your take?
Well, first of all, I think you adequately pointed out, you supremely pointed out, Disney is not the Disney of Walt Disney, who is rotating so fast in his grave, you know, he's probably creating earthquakes in California. Obviously Disney was started for children, characters for children, by a man who loved children. And this is a company that is a part of the community that is no longer the community it used to be. Hollywood has nothing in common with the Hollywood of the Golden Age, and the values of Hollywood are the values of the far left. The same kind of forces that drive the Democrat Party, AOC plus three, are the forces that drive the worldviews of Hollywood. And so there's a contest going on in Hollywood. You see it among actors and celebrities. They're all trying to show that they have more, quote, virtue, close quote, than the other person. Of course, this isn't virtue as a biblical worldview person would define virtue. This is virtue as somebody like Vladimir Lenin would define virtue.
Right.
And so they're out there trying to out-virtue each other. So one person says, well, you know, I'm a compassionate person, and I tolerate the homosexual lifestyle. Oh, and then the other person says, well, I'm even more passionate than you. I am going to try to convert the country to the homosexual lifestyle. So that, and it just goes on from there. Then we have people like Rosanna Arquette, who shows her virtue by saying she's ashamed that she was ever born because of her skin color. So this it's a form of insanity. Disney recently pushed LGBTQ, PDQ, XYZ in a cartoon that was being marketed. This was last year. To preschoolers, and this is part of, in the name of their fake compassion, they disregard the innocence of young people. Mm. And that's part of the thing that makes this so heinous. Disney Channel is a babysitter, and in a sense, used by parents to occupy children, where they will take their children, place them in a room with a television or device tuned to the Disney Channel, trusting that somehow the Disney Channel will have wholesome programming.
So oh, I have done it. I have done it myself.
Everyone has. And it's been, you know, it's a wonderful, a tool for responsible parents. But the problem is, if you're a responsible parent now, you can't leave your children alone with the Disney Channel because they have this agenda. And Bob Iger, who's the head of Disney, and by the way, we're talking about the most powerful entertainment company in the world. Mm-hmm. They now have merged with the entertainment assets of what used to be called 20th Century Fox. And there they have a new streaming company coming out. They control 30-40% of the movie market. This is a huge company, and Bob Iger's been a very formidable and smart executive who's unfortunately caught up in this hyper-political correctness of Hollywood. Otherwise, how could someone in their right mind greenlight programming that is really designed for very young viewers? I mean, we're talking about kids that watch Andy Mack. I would venture to say that there may be kids below age 7 who have seen this show. And so to have a same-sex couple on the show, regardless of your beliefs, it doesn't belong in the heads of innocent kids who don't think naturally about sex at all.
Exactly.
But done, yeah, the idea of it, of course, comes from the gay organizations, the homosexual movement, to somehow condition the culture away from, quote, straight supremacy. And, you know, I because the same thing as white supremacy, you're not supposed to favor any sort of proclivity over another according to the left in a matter of sort of equality. And so and we see it get to its pinnacle of insanity when, in fact, they want to perpetuate a non-scientific myth that somehow cross-dressing is a gender or somehow extensive surgery constitutes a gender or a mood that someone wakes up in the morning equals a gender. A gender is a biological, chromosomal, genetic thing that is scientific. And yet this agenda, this myth, which is what the left uses over and over again, is they point the finger at people right of center and say, you're anti-science. They're promoting a myth that absolutely denies science. So it's all part of it, but it's monstrous. And I guess the most important thing is parents have to know now that, no, we can't, unfortunately, trust the Disney Channel. Time to bring in some DVDs. And, you know, you change the DVD every few hours.
Well, and I would also add to that in just the couple of seconds that we have left, monitor what your kids are watching. Do not blindly assume that any piece of the culture will not be used as an attempt to shoehorn a political ideology. We know this from the Arthur PBS episode with the gay wedding. We know this from Doc McStuffins, where there were two moms on multiple episodes. We know this from multiple items that appear in the culture. James Hirschen has been my guest today on Washington Watch. Be careful, little eyes, what you see, and little ears, what you hear. And also, if you don't think Hollywood has an agenda, keep your eyes open for a new movie coming out called The Hunt, in which elites gear themselves toward killing deplorables. And yes, the screenplay said just that, originally titled Red State versus Blue State. A new horror film you won't want to see. You're listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Next up, more gender madness. An Ohio school district has ultimately decided not to punish a young boy for misgendering another.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, filling in for Tony on this Sunday, Friday edition. Well, just when I think I have read it all or heard it all, I am continually surprised by more strange news. An Ohio sixth grader, and we'll refer to him as John Doe, will not face punishment for going forward for using the wrong pronoun for a boy who believed he was a girl. This is according to Liberty Counsel, the religious liberty law firm who is representing John Doe. So in this edition of Stranger and Stranger, I've got Richard Mast, attorney with Liberty Counsel, who is representing John Doe, and he can tell us about the victory. Richard, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Sarah. Glad to be here.
So let's talk about this incident. This is an 11-year-old. I have a 10-year-old. So the mind reels at the potential for discipline over the use of an incorrect pronoun. And the incident that John Doe got in trouble for took place in an art class back in May when the sixth grader heard some girls talking about this transgender child saying that he was taking female hormones and would later have his male parts removed, making him a girl. So what did your client say at that point?
Well, this had been going on for some time, and he had held his tongue. And, you know, there's only so much that a person who lives in accordance with reality can take. And he said to the girls, he's a boy, not a girl. And one of his friends said, yeah, you are what you're born with. And this attracted the attention of the teacher, and these boys were disciplined afterwards for using biologically correct pronouns or pronouns consistent with actual biological sex. And it's coming to a sad state of affairs where you have kids that are having to fight these battles and what is truth, what is reality. And on the other side of it, poor kids who are confused about their gender or about their sex, and they're looking at sterility and being sterilized with cross-sex hormones and surgical mutilation and castration of boys here based on what's at best a mental condition. And they need the truth. And they need kids like this that will speak the truth and love to them because they care about them.
Richard, that's a great word of truth in what seems to be a very upside-down world right now. And in this circumstance, there are ultimately two victims, aren't there? You've got John Doe, who is stating an objective reality. He was born with boy parts. It's what you were born with. And then, of course, you have this transgender identifying child, and you think, well, this child is already on the path to modification of his body and his hormones, for which there will be long-term damage. So John is pulled out of physical education class. He's sent to the principal's office, which had to be embarrassing for this young boy. And what did the principal tell John?
He said, the principal said that you can have your beliefs, but this child wants to be called a girl, and there might be consequences for this. And that was in the initial conversation, and then the consequences came later that day when he was pulled down, pulled out of PE, walked down to the principal's office, had to sit out that class. And from what he told me, the other boys that were involved were suspended with a one-day out-of-school suspension. So we haven't talked directly to those boys. That's a report from our client. But they were disciplined as well. And what the principal told his mom was that she didn't really think that he was bullying the boy, but he did say what he said, and that's why he got a lesser punishment. And so, you know, it's clear that this is an attempt to establish an orthodoxy. Other people don't have the right to force you to speak. That's a compelled speech violation. It's unconstitutional. Yes. And in this case, you know, he was speaking a truism, and, you know, perhaps he's the only one to tell this this child the truth. It's like a case of, I don't know, out of Hans Christian Andersen, where, you know, someone, a little child, is willing to say that this this transgender ideology that is sweeping the nation or stalking the nation has no clothes.
That's immediately what I thought about, is that everyone is participating in a subjective reality, in a fiction that does not exist under the letter of the law. Thanks be to God, because we don't yet have an Equality Act on the books. So you all at Liberty Council sent a letter to the school district. What did you say?
Well, we told them that this was unlawful and that we wanted assurances that nothing that this child did was bullying. He had a he was participating in a conversation with girls. He told the girls his opinion. And if it's permissible for girls to talk about a boy having his male private parts removed in a public school classroom, then it's certainly permissible for that, for another child to respectfully disagree and to affirm that biological sex is reality. You know, puberty is not a disease, and they should stop treating this like natural puberty is something wrong with you. And if a child is uncomfortable with who they are, we totally sympathize with them, but they need to be affirmed in accordance with reality. And
yes.
Schools cannot threaten children. They cannot bully the other children into assenting to a lie.
So the Board of Education responded to this letter, and what was their response to your demand?
Well, the school board attorney said that he had not received this did not constitute formal disciplinary action, which, you know, that's good. But what's the definition of formal, I suppose? I mean, we submit that hauling him out in front of his friends and making him sit out PE in response to incorrect speech is discipline, whether it's formal or informal. But he did say that, you know, that the board respects student speech rights, and that they will not coerce students to adopt particular pronouns. So all in all, we think that, and the parents think that that's sufficient for now. They have no desire to, you know, create a big thing, but at the end of the day, they wanted other children also to know about their First Amendment rights, because this is not the first time I've encountered this in the public schools.
And unfortunately, it seems to be sort of a crack in the edifice of reality, doesn't it? We are hoping not to see more cases like this. Richard Mast with Liberty Council has been my guest today. You are listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, Lehigh County, Pennsylvania can continue to use its 70-year-old historical seal, including the cross image, after a recent court ruling. Diana Verum, attorney with Beckett Law Firm, who advocated for the county, joins me next.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, filling in for Tony. Well, Lehigh County, Pennsylvania is now free to continue honoring its history and culture with its 70-year-old seal that includes a bunch of images, including the image of a Latin cross. Your favorite atheists at the Freedom From Religion Foundation were behind the lawsuit to get the cross removed from the county seal and flag. Joining me now with her analysis is Diana Verm, a Beckett Law Firm attorney, and Beckett represented the county in the case. So welcome to the show, Diana. I've got plenty of questions.
Thanks so much for having me, Sarah.
Before we plunge into the details, because this seems initially like such a cut and dry case, and we know after reading up on this that Bladensburg was ultimately an important and decisive factor in the Third Circuit's decision. I am surprised at the fact that Freedom From Religion Foundation believed that they could target a seal, and see, this is why I have to laugh, because really some of this is left-wing insanity. That includes a bunch of images. Can you tell us what some of those images are?
Sure. So the seal includes over a dozen images that reflect the history and culture and economy of the county. So a grain silo, the county courthouse, a large heart, and the Liberty Bell are all on the seal. So the cross is just one, out of context, it's one of many things that the county chose to represent its history and culture.
So Freedom From Religion Foundation sued Lehigh County all the way back in 2016. Had anyone ever complained about the presence of the cross on the flag or the seal?
Not at all. There was no conflict over the seal until Freedom From Religion Foundation came in and wrote a letter to the county saying, remove it or we'll sue. And they followed through on that threat.
So it's kind
of, fortunately, the county didn't back down. You know, fortunately, the county recognized that this is part of our history and culture, and we don't have to remove it just because Freedom From Religion Foundation says so.
So it's sort of freedom from your religion, because we have no religion, but we want to make sure you can't express any historical significance to yours as well. So their objection was what? That this was an endorsement, an official government endorsement of religion?
Right. Right, exactly. They were relying on an old test for constitutionality called the Lemon Test, based on an old Supreme Court case, And that requires courts to say whether or not the government intended to endorse religion, as if religion is a dirty word and the government has to pretend that religion isn't a part of our country's history and culture and its people's lives.
And this case was put on hold pending the decision in Bladensburg Cross, correct?
Right. That's right. And that was a World War I memorial in Bladensburg, Maryland. And the court upheld the cross on the war memorial. It didn't apply the Lemon Test. So in Lehigh County, this is the first case to consider a similar religious symbol and to follow the Supreme Court's Bladensburg ruling. And it's a great case to start off the courts on this because it provides guidance. It provides an example of upholding another religious symbol that's part of our history and culture that we don't have to scrub just because it reflects what people believe.
Absolutely. So now we're developing a sort of new cadre of case law on solid jurisprudence and not having to scrub any religious historical notation. So the Third Circuit Court of Appeals was a deciding court here. What did they say in their 3-0 decision?
They applied the Bladensburg case. The judges in the Third Circuit said, when you have something that's old, that's been part of a community for a long time without conflict, it's not discriminatory and it's not disrespectful towards anyone. It's presumptively constitutional. That means we are going to assume it's constitutional unless there's something wrong with it, unless you can show evidence that there was disrespect or discrimination. There is no evidence of that in Lehigh County. We've already talked about how there was no conflict over the seal until Freedom from Religion Foundation showed up from Wisconsin. And the Third Circuit said Lehigh County can continue to use the seal without changing it.
Maybe they ought to refer to themselves as the Perpetually Offended Freedom from Religion Foundation. They may not have much to do going forward in the future if they can't seem to find any other historical representations of religion to attack. Because, of course, you and I know that this is a part of our cultural history, that to scrub any vestige from religion in the public square really just takes away any recognition of the role that it's played in the founding of our nation, its counties, its symbols, the service of Americans who've died. So do you believe that this is sort of the starting domino to set off the fall of the Lemon Test? Is that your hope?
We at Beckett, we've been arguing that the Lemon Test has been dead for a long time, and I think this is another nail in the coffin. The Supreme Court hasn't applied it in a long time, and I think we're going to see lower courts finally following that court's guide.
We are hopeful that that is also the developing trend. Thank you so much for joining us, Diana. It's been a pleasure to talk to you from the Beckett Law Firm, who had another victory for Lehigh County. You are listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, filling in for Tony Perkins on this Friday edition. Well, coming up next, a New York judge ruled that Fordham University, a private school, must recognize Students for Justice in Palestine, despite the fact that it wants to delegitimize the nation of Israel. I'll talk with Liz Burney, attorney with the Zionist Organization of America, coming up next.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins. Go to TonyPerkins.com, our website, for today's broadcast with resources and links, including the link to submit your comments before the deadline of August 15th on Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act. Ask Secretary Azar of the HHS to submit a plain meaning of the term sex in this piece of legislation. Sex as man and woman. Very basic, but it will come up again. Submit your comment. We're trying to get 20,000 signatures. We are well over 19,000, so we are close. TonyPerkins.com. Well, Fordham University in the Bronx has been issued a ruling in which a chapter of the Students for Justice in Palestine group must be recognized as a university-approved club after declining to do so back in 2016. This coming from a New York judge on Tuesday of this week. Following the ruling, the school said that it will review the decision and consider the next step, possibly indicating its willingness to appeal. Joining me now with her analysis to talk about this case and about the rising tide of anti-Semitism in a school context is Liz Burney, attorney with the Zionist Organization of America. Liz, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, and thank you for all the good work that you do.
Thank you. Well, this is an issue near and dear to our hearts here at FRC, and we feel compelled to speak out against anti-Semitism wherever we find it. And we are shocked about this decision ruling that Fordham University has to recognize this SJP chapter. Now, Students for Justice in Palestine, for those of you who are not up on this topic, justice sounds very amiable. It sounds very benign, congenial. Can you explain a little bit about this organization and what they believe?
Okay, well, Students for Justice, thank you so much. That's a great question. Students for Justice in Palestine is the major arm of the BDS movement on college campuses. And BDS stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. It is a It's the more modern iteration of the age-old movement to discriminate against Jews. There were boycotts against Jews, you know, over 100 years ago, which actually inspired Theodor Herzl to write his book about the Jewish state, that, you know, mm-hmm. if you have a Jewish state, finally Jews will be free from anti-Jewish boycotts. We had the Nazi boycott of Jews was the first official act of the Nazis against the Jewish people that, you know, started at, you know, was really the beginning of the Holocaust. The Arab League boycott against Jews started in 1945, even before the Jewish state was reconstituted. And this most modern version is actually, a lot of people are unaware of this, but BDS tries to present itself as a civil society movement, but it is really sponsored by terrorist organizations, including mm-hmm. the PFLP, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which is a designated terrorist organization in the United States, Canada, and Europe, and elsewhere. Hamas, which is, you know, is also a designated terrorist organization. Also, the Palestinian Authority, in violation of the Oslo Accords. The Oslo Accords were supposed to bring out, call for economic cooperation between the Palestinian Authority and Israel, and instead the Palestinian Authority started the boycotts, together with the PFLP and Hamas. There was recently, which is very worthwhile reading, an Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs study called Terrorists and Suits. You can easily look it up on the Internet. Mm-hmm. Discusses all of the overlap and all of the terrorists who are involved with the BDS movement. It's pure anti-Semitism. It's very deceptive also. It tries to say that it's a civil rights organization, you know, to protect Palestinian rights. It's not. It's for the destruction of Israel. Asad Abu Khalil, who is a major supporter of the BDS movement, openly stated that the real goal of BDS is to end the existence of Israel. It's very interesting because in this case, the judge only thought when the only description of BDS that the judge gave was that, quote, he cited the claim by the plaintiffs, by the members of SJP, that BDS, quote, BDS are nonviolent tactics meant to pressure the Israeli government to respect Palestinian rights. Mm-hmm. And if you read, and the fact that the judge never discussed what BDS really is very problematic.
I find this unwillingness to really get into the true open definition of what BDS is and who SJP is. And to say that they are a front group for Hamas is no overstatement. In fact, as recently as a year or two ago, the Stanford Review published a very large expose about SJP on their own campuses, in which they said overtly SJP is connected to Hamas. So there is no doubting the fact that SJP promoting the BDS movement, fronting Hamas, this is an organization who, I don't care how benign you think the classification, this Fordham University official, the dean of students, Keith Eldridge, knew exactly what he was dealing with. I want to quote his statement here initially, which I think is so commendable. So the dean of students, this is now back in 2016, said that while students are encouraged to promote diverse political viewpoints and we encourage conversation and debate, I cannot support an organization whose sole purpose is advocating political goals of a specific group and against a specific country when these goals clearly conflict with and run contrary to the mission and values of the university. One would think this in and of itself, this statement by a university official, would be sufficient to close the book on whatever this controversy was. So why did this move forward on a legal challenge? Why were they not satisfied with the outcome?
Well, I mean, the SJP is backed up by, a lot of Hamas-related lawyers, and basically a lot of people also think that the campus arm is just, you know, it's just a bunch of students. A lot of these students are professional students, and they have the backing. Again, they're highly organized and professional, and they're highly mm-hmm. tied in mm-hmm. to people who, you know, will try to make an issue out of everything. And I should mention SJP in and of itself uses violent tactics. I mean, one of the other things that I thought was so outrageous about this decision was that the judge stated that that Dean Eldridge did not explain, you know, did not give any rational reason why he thought that SJP's presence on campus would lead to violence. And he did. If you read Dean Eldridge's affidavit, he goes into great detail about all the people he discussed SJP with and the investigations he did and the violent tactics that SJP has used on college campuses throughout the country. The judge ignored all this. The judge said, listen to this, the quote, SJP advocates only legal, nonviolent tactics aimed at changing Israel's policies. And I'd like to give your listeners a couple of examples of some of the things that SJP has done, which DOA has been very involved in this issue for, you know, the past 15 years, you know, for some of the terrible things they've done. You know, they had virtual riots and demonstrations on the CUNY campuses where they were yelling, screaming, death to the Jews, mm-hmm. and Zionists out of CUNY, Jews out of CUNY. They have physically assaulted students. There was a student at Temple University who went over to the SJP table that tried to have a reasonable discussion, and he got punched. There was an SJP student in San Francisco who was, you know, talking about how his knives, he's going to use his sharp knives to attack people. They've attacked people who were neutral who were non-Jews who were simply neutral on the issue in issues related to Israel, and they've attacked them. They've also engaged in all these underhanded tactics to get resolutions passed against Israel. They usually schedule the resolutions on a Jewish holiday or on a Saturday when Orthodox Jews or conservative Jews are not going to show up to vote. They don't tell people about the vote. I mean, there've been campuses where 35,000 people on the campus, and somehow they maneuver things so that 14 people took a vote against Israel, and they claim that the campus was against Israel. I mean, they're deceptive. They're violent. And Dean Eldridge, he's attached to his affidavit over 60 pages of documents about the problems with SJP, and the judge ignored all of it.
This is so compelling because I see this as an initial step toward increasing hostility to our Jewish friends and to these Jews on campus who, I have to tell you, and having followed this issue with a colleague here, we are finding more and more academic evidence of increasing hostility. Alger Minor, as you know, maintains, as does AMCHA Initiative, a list of the most hostile universities in America for Jewish students. And to say that that is the case in the United States turns my It absolutely curls my toes. It incenses me because this is a nation in which they should feel the most safe. They should feel the most protected. We are the most free. We are a superpower. We are a democracy. To find this level of anti-Semitic hostility on American campuses, and it's not just universities, because I did receive from Zionist Organization of America a sampling of the proposed anti-Semitic school curriculum for California public schools. And there is a draft curriculum that will be closed for comment on August 15th. It erases American Jewish experiences. It omits anti-Semitism as an entire category. It singles out Israel for condemnation. This is a proposed public school curriculum for ethnic studies. I'm absolutely flabbergasted by this.
Yes, and also, I mean, there have been several studies about campus anti-Semitism. Brandeis University did studies in 2015 and 2016. ALHA Initiative, which you just mentioned, did studies in 2015 and 2017, and they found that, you know what, the biggest predictor of campus anti-Semitism is the presence of SJP on campus. Mm.
Wow. And so Fordham University makes a step toward preventing that from being the case. This private university, by the way, well within its legal right to make a determination about the existence of student chapters, whatever their political, religious, or other affiliation may be. So for Justice Nancy Bannon to say it didn't abide by its own published rules, even though Eldridge had submitted 60 pages of evidentiary support, absolutely stuns me. So even Carly Gammel, who's the director of Stand With Us, this is the Center for Combating Anti-Semitism, said the same thing. Fordham is a private university that decided to stand up to a national organization with a lengthy record of spreading hate, supporting violence, and violating free speech. So what do you believe, as you're an attorney, you've pored over this decision, what do you believe, Liz, is the next step in this case?
I certainly hope that Fordham appeals. I mean, this decision is so outrageous. I mean, there were so many things that were wrong with this decision. You know, the judge just twisted and turned everything she could to try and lied about the record. I mean, one of the things she said was that because it's a motion to dismiss, we're only going to look at the record as is. We can't look outside the record. But then she transformed. She didn't look at the whole record because there was a huge, as you just mentioned, there was a huge record of over 60 pages of exhibits plus a long affidavit by the dean of students, Keith Eldridge. I mean, he discussed some of the people he spoke to. He spoke about the faculty advisor to the Jewish student organization who was concerned that SJP would adversely affect. There were some new positive relations between the Jewish student organization and a Muslim student group, and she was very concerned, and this has happened in the past. In fact, in CUNY, when one of the Muslim student organizations wanted to have a joint event with the Jewish organization there, the Hillel organization, SJP threatened them, and the Muslim organization had to withdraw, and they feared for their safety. They told the Jewish organization they feared for their safety if they continued to have the event. A biology professor at Fordham provided links about the escalation on campus, SJP's escalation and inflammatory tactics on campuses. So you had another professor there indicated that BDS was highly inflammatory, and all this was before the judge. The judge had all this and ignored all of it. And one of the ways she did this is she said, this is a motion to dismiss, we can only look at the record. So first of all, she ignored 95% of the record. But then she converted the motion to dismiss. Because normally if you grant a motion to dismiss, and I'm sorry that this is a little technical.
Liz, we are out of time, my friend. We're going to have you back on because this is an issue we need to continue discussing. We are hopeful for an appeal, as I know ZOA is. Thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. I have been Sarah Perry, filling in for Tony Perkins. We will catch you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.